So Kevin Glazier really is just to have the experience reading Shuvot together. Shuvot has different purposes. Some of them are Lumpish Shuvot. One of them appears to be a complete rhetorical Shuvot. And then you have Menoshe Shuvot, which are non-halachic advice. That's not where you can find it. Their attempts to avoid the halacha, to avoid straightforward halacha. And then you have the Tzitzel Yezer, who really is a straightforward halachic shiva, but it'd be interesting to see whether there's anything resembling a halachic argument in the halachic shiva, meaning a formal halachic argument. Okay, so Rebrona is just there he has a very abstract question, right? This is not a concrete question, can I say X or Y? His question is a generic question, can I say true things about my friend? Right, and this is obviously, this is not a response written to convince, right? This is a post facto, it's a post facto reconstruction of why he said what he said. And I guess Nick Kessler is the audience, right? The audience here, so far as I can tell, is his Lundish colleague, as opposed to the person who asked the question, right? It's all, Nishalti, 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 right? Near Lundish. Okay, and I pointed out initially, like, why did he not quote the wrong? What does he bother answering? He's gone through his whole shiva, whatever.
Those are
my initials, yeah. Those are my initials. Right, so why did he not quote the wrong?
I have an idea.
Well, I'm answering that question. Pretty starkly. Or even in the 15th century, he presumably knows the wrong. That's why I gave you the biography, right? Are you the biography?
No.
Tell you about your case. All right, give me a file. Anyway, my brother is 15th century Bulgaria, I think. I'm not sure. That's possible? Maybe Italy? I'm getting confused with somebody else before I thought you knew the biography. Okay.
Do you have
fresh copies
of
this? I have an umbrella on. I didn't pull that. Where is this one? Germany. What year? 1400. So really knows the wrong one. Very unlikely he doesn't know the Rambam. But he seems to be proceeding in willful ignorance of the Rambam. Fine. Okay, so he ignores the Rambam, and he says, right, and his problem, and it's a really good problem, is that what statement seems to indicate that there can't be what's known as true? Who? I guess, nobody wants to. Rabbi Yossi, right? Rabbi Yossi, right? Because the straightforward reading of Rabbi Yossi, he concedes, is that Rabbi Yossi said, I never backed down from anything I said. Right? Not that I ever said anything nasty to anybody. Right? That's the least right, which is the way some people read. They just think that, right, they just think that it's true. That's what he quotes Rashi. Right? Rashi says, you love the Shalot, you know, I think that was the Shalot, the Shalot, the Lord, the Shalot, the Pisha, and Martianus. Right? Rabbi Yossi prays, you understand Rabbi Yossi's statement, I never had to retract, as I never had to bother keeping my story straight, but I always told the truth. Okay. Jewish. So, Rob, what is his kasha on Rashi's understanding of Rabbi Yossi? Before we get it, right? The first kasha, right? But you really start with the Pirusha, what's he asking?
He doesn't understand what Rashi thinks. Rashi's
good, why? Why? What's wrong with Rashi? Yes,
sir. I think he thinks that Shiva that Rabbi Yossi knows.
Of course Rabbi Yossi never said what's known. If all Rashi is saying is, right, if all Rashi is saying is Rabbi Yossi says, I never said Lashon Hara, then big deal. Right? We hope that Rabbi Yossi would never say Lashon Hara. Right? That's why I pointed out Seraphim, because we learned that Rashi just said that everybody says Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is one of the other, they're not me to write in a dummy song out of the Koyon. So it's not such a big deal that Rabbi Yossi, if Rabbi Yossi managed actually never to say Lashon Hara, that would be that would be quite an accomplishment. And in general, the genre of rabbinic literature where people say, I deserve credit because I do X, often is not anything that we regard as particularly outlandish, like the Inshallah Shadid. Now, some of these are things that probably started off as the finisher and then became din, like men covering their heads. Right, they hold it down, I don't think of the rose, and things like that. But I don't think it's external to the genre for people to praise themselves for being punctilious and succeeding in keeping a certain area of halakha as a right, as opposed to assuming that the right land that halakha is minimal Judaism and only get praised for doing more. Okay, so the question is, since Lashon Hara is such a terrible thing, of course Rabbi Yossi wouldn't say Lashon Hara. So if the whole purpose of Rabbi Yossi's statement is to say that I always spoke the truth and therefore I never said Lashon Hara, now I don't understand this question at all from another ground. Even if it's true that Rabbi Yossi spoke truth, and truth is never Lashon Hara, but Rabbi Yossi actually went further. Not only did he not speak Lashon Hara, he also made sure that he never said true things about people that he wasn't going to say to their face. So it could perfectly well be that in terms of Lashon Hara, all Rabbi Yossi needed was to say the truth. But in addition, he had this thing that he was willing to say to their face. Okay, that's not the answer that Rabbi Bruna gives, though. Right, Rabbi Bruna gives what answer? Yeah, I'll tell you what he says.
Rabbi Yossi must have avoided saying things
even when they weren't Talmud Shemara. Specifically, he avoided saying bad things about other people when he has no practical purpose, unless he said it before their face. It's a very complicated argument. So Rabbi Yossi, when making a statement like so-and-so is stealing my land, and he knew, of course, that was true, and it was a myth to the publicize that this person had the faith. Nonetheless, he wouldn't say it. He would lose his land unless he knew that he had proof. I'm not going to read it together. Illegally, and it's a mitzvah to hate him, and it's also a mitzvah to publicize that the man is stealing his land. So Rabbi Yossi, while being praised, is failing to fulfill the mitzvah of exposing wrongdoers. So I don't know why Rabbi Yossi gets praised so much for failing to fulfill the mitzvah. To become Malcolm Nisra, Rabbi Yossi will almost be a mitzvah to Shalom. Elin Cain, the Yadis Tahadin, the Yitzli Adin. The Oz, Musa Lomarka, Shalom Bishne Yosotoni, Kodesh Tobu Din. Came in this Amra to Afe Mara. So what did that sentence mean? Yeah. Jonathan, what do you think that sentence meant?
So, I think he's saying that in a case when there are Adim, and therefore you would be able to bring it to best and then win, then
that's
for some reason
permits
it. So I'm not
entirely sure. He has to read the sentence, right?
He would be undecided if he is lady.
Right, and then what would he do?
Sir Lomar and Jalobaphana,
Mr. Osapani, called him to Zelda, and
came
into this
opera
of Alpha. Does that sentence make any sense at all?
No, considering the assumption
of Alpha. Yeah. I thought it just doesn't work, right? Hey. Mr. Lomar came, Scott Jalobaphana, Osapani.
I thought he was just saying that logically.
Yeah.
And it's not that to me that he's... Ever since I've been told, he understands that Rabbi Yossi is not the same as Bava Yisrasa. He doesn't see that as a conception that you can have a non-literal Bava or a consummate Bava.
No.
No, he thinks somehow accomplish that.
Well, all of his first future answers, he did not say that, and then his final answer, definitely
doesn't
say that.
No, but
he definitely didn't say that. Bobby Mara and Bobby different. You can't accomplish Bobby Mara and not Bobby Mara.
I don't know, what do you want to say?
Yeah. Right? Like, if you replace that with someone else, If you replace that with something else, maybe it means... I cannot make sense of it as long as it says, oh, you can. It sounds like he's contradicting himself, and then one thing to think about is he's saying it.
Wait, why does it necessarily have to be that he thinks
it's Afe
Mara
has to be
literal?
Well, how did Aiden make it Afe Mara when he should require three?
Well, if Afe Mara means that the subject of the event is definitely going to eventually find out.
Uh-huh.
And like, if you say, if you, like, you go to this, like, no character, you can't look at that. But it's not
really
it's not
really
Afe Mara.
So, okay, so translate defense to me and tell me what you think.
Defense.
Defense, right. You call, right, so, tell me, right, since, I mean, even though Yossi knew that so-and-so, right, was stealing his property and had it to the public side, nonetheless, he wouldn't say it where?
If two witnesses...
Nonetheless, neither Yossi don't know where, right, what's the answer. Nonetheless, Yossi was careful not to say that... Not to speak of where? In outside of Beitin?
Yeah. I'm trying to discuss the baby who we go.
Always, anyway.
Okay, fine, go.
It's like, I'll give Clark a heck that he doesn't vote right now. Like, but he, but if two witnesses know and are, and like, he's planning on doing the paper to court, and like, he's just, yeah, he's just, like, you know, publishing in court by the two witnesses, then it's, then it's fine.
It
doesn't have to be, like, staying in front of the
business. So, well, Majin means I never said anything that I wouldn't be able to back up in court?
Yeah.
Jesse, you don't like it.
I really want L.E. Chang to say a few. That's what I want. Right? Because right now the way it reads, this is how it translates, okay? But right now the way it reads is, Rabiosi is talking about a case where he says Tony is a thief who is eating my land, you know, through theft. And even though Rabiosi knows for a fact this person is eating from his land through theft,
right,
and to mention that he and then to publicize it, in any case, he was careful not to repeat it, and he would lose his land, and then he goes, unless there are witnesses and there are aliens to what, I don't know, to what he's saying, to the fact that other witnesses maybe, right?
What about
in which case, it's much more of a Mark Topshimoku say, like, Tony, it's closer to say it, not in front. And it sounds like, meaning, it's weird because the whole point is what Mari Bruno wants to say is that Ernie Yossi is doing something which is the game show that he's, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that it's much easier to say it, not in front of him, should be, and he doesn't do it anyway. The fact is,
yeah.
Right? That's why, if you read a few, where he says, even in the case where it's so perfectly clear that he has the legal right to do it, he still doesn't do it, right? That would make sense to me. But it doesn't say that.
Because, like, first of all, because then you'd be saying he has absolutely no way
So then, what's the Ickerman in this case? And why does he use the word Mutter as opposed to, you know, to refer to what, I just find the whole thing weird, but he doesn't say what I wanted to say, because he doesn't say a few, so...
Yeah.
I'm clearly wrong. I just don't know what's right. That's
okay. So I believe that, you know, it sounds, you know, if you read it the way L does, which I think is the best we can do, but doesn't quite satisfy me yet.
It's also like, if you, I mean, I don't know if he ends up rejecting this, but like in the first part of the talk, what he's saying, like what he's describing, why the UFC, like what happening in front of the UFC, like it's not about saying something exactly in front of him. It's about him finding out about it. Or not
hearing
what
we find out. Maybe. I think it's the best we can do.
If he comes and asks me,
why
would I say it? If he wasn't there, I'd say it.
Well, that's what Rashi says. I mean, that's Rashi's quote, right?
And he's just, you know, he's just limiting it to, like, he's, because that's a really dropy thing, but
Right, that's, I think it's very possible that he wouldn't say things that he would have to take back. And if you went to court and you had nothing to, it doesn't fit the language beautifully, but logically it makes sense to say that we're looking, even though, now he holds that there's a mitzvah of parsing, right, that you should publicize wrongdoing that you know about, even though, right, if they sue you, if you go to court and all you have is an unsupported allegation, right, they're going to make you retract. And if you make an unsupported allegation against somebody, then if they go to court, you will have to retract. They go to court, you'll have to, or if you try to go to court, you'll have to retract because all you're doing is defending them. So Rabbi Yossi said, I would never make, even though there is a mitzvah to make statements out of court, to publicize wrongdoing, I would never make statements that I couldn't make out in court. It's just not. The last line is a problem because the Oz Mutter doesn't make any sense according to any reading of them because the whole point of Yossi should say something which is more than Mutter. So what does he need to Oz Mutter lo martach shalom is now so funny? Kodesh Tovah Levin.
So,
connecting
to Mutter says, that is from the guy.
Right, how can that be came in this offer right here?
I don't know if this is actually part of the reading or if it has anything to do with the Adim of the independent Adim that's the guy that's trying to get the chazak on your land without you having told them, so they already know. When you say something, it's already like you're not the first one to be the ring that's the open, because those people already know about it. That's true.
It's Mutter because it was said after Mara, so it's because there are two people. Okay, double. Yes, John.
I mean, the tenses don't work out here, but if you say Kevin is after Bhavi Mara, you could have moved, he said Bhavi Mara. I mean, once you have Aiden,
right. Definitely. I think Yael does a good job of saying that Rashi defines Afe Mara not as actually Afe Mara, but that I wouldn't, right, not as, right, Lafi Chazarti, but who trusts you, Lafalur. Right, this is when it will be said. And right, and it sounds to me like being the case, right, saying that we're dealing with Yossi would say things, right, Kodim Shetova Ledin, right, then it would be Mutter. Although the language of Mutter is poor because, right, because really the whole point was it was Mutter beforehand anyway.
So maybe he's just saying that really Yossi follows Afi Mara instead of Afi Esfata, and in some cases that does end up being, like, more strict, and in some cases, like, I mean, like, that's really... The kid's logic, like, really, how, like,
Baz
and Ephraim, like, inspired by that logic.
Let's see if it works at the end. Let's go on and see if we can see it. Okay. Second kid.
Could it not be, like, I guess, generally said? I guess the second kid, that would generally be said.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. It's just the language of Mutter doesn't work, and the, the language of Mutter really doesn't work. I think Yael's is the best. I can't do anything better than Yael's suggestion right now. Okay, second possibility. Reuven said, call Shimon a goslin. And now that it's said in front of Shimon, Rabbi Yossi could repeat it. And you come up when he hears Rabbi Yossi. So this, to my knowledge, I don't think anybody, any other of the other Rishonim took this specific option, right, where we say that the sound of Afi Mara is talking about third parties. Right, so the statement is that the original statement, the called open out of Afe Mara means anything which is said to someone's face you can repeat without fear of Lashon Hara. That's a very interesting conception. Anything you repeat that the other person, that the person you're talking about already knows is being said about him and not Lashon Hara. Not clear why it's not Lashon Hara, since the person presumably would still rather not be said to other people. Unless you claim that it's not much harder to say that so-and-so said this about so-and-so to his face. Because if I walk around and I say that Daniel calls Jesse a Republican, right, and I don't say that Jesse's a Republican, I just say that Daniel calls Jesse a Republican, so that's not much harder about Jesse, because we can all think that Daniel's making up, it's much harder about Daniel. The only reason it's less nervous about Daniel is if you're afraid that Jesse will find this out. And since Daniel said it to Jesse, say it, you don't have to be worried about it. Okay, as it seems to be the limited set of Lashon Hara, Yeah, it seems to be like so, not just, you know, but a particular kind of secret.
Yeah,
right. Lashon Hara is the spreading of the statement that somebody said what we would have thought was Lashon Hara.
Unless the killer goes for Jesse, and that we don't want word getting out that...
No, he says it's Mutzer, right? It's pointing to his Mutzer. Once Samuel calls Jesse Republican to his face, then I can, when I was overhearing, can repeat it whenever I want, because Jesse already knows...
Jesse already knows that his secret is out.
Jesse already knows it, but who says it's true?
I mean...
Right, that's the other way. Is it true or not? The only thing I can say to my own knowledge is that Samuel called Jesse this. Okay, this is interesting. Now, it says, now Rabbi Yossi would not... Rabbi Yossi would not repeat things. Now, if someone tell me how this fits into the language, right? How does that show Rabbi Yossi going beyond the... Right, the halakha is that you can repeat anything that somebody said to the subject. But Rabbi Yossi wouldn't even do that.
I never had to check to see if Jesse or if he was just saying anything.
I never said anything to anybody.
Right.
That's like
other people
thinking stuff. And why does that seem to be on the Mahmoudi number of Lachorah?
No. I never repeated that Daniel said something about Jesse.
Translate the phrase.
I never said something
and
I'm not
behind
my back because I wasn't listening because I was embarrassed if you knew that I was talking about this sort of thing.
So I never said anything nasty at all. That's all it means. Let me just make up the case. Because of course, you're never supposed to say anything nasty. The event was, whatever the heck there is, I never took advantage of it.
Yes.
Okay. That leaves us, a wide range.
Yes.
Right. We have divorced ourselves from the words entirely. Okay.
We've divorced ourselves from the words entirely.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you just say what he's saying, like, that even though it would be most hard to give those copy of Plata, like, he wouldn't do it, like, he would only do it if he would only say something that you would say, or that either that he would say in front of the subject, or that the subject is going to find out already?
No, here he says, even though, right, the second one says, even though it's mutter because it's Pitaka Vape Mara, right, because of his entry to it. The second statement is, here the Tanya say Shimon, right, the Shin of Shimon.
Oh.
Right, you guys will get that?
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's really in Shimon.
Yeah,
ah.
Yeah,
it's Shlosha.
That's what I thought it was.
No.
Oh.
That might be
what I thought. That's what
he
wanted to say, that, look, he's just taken both possible options in the gun of the
arm of
the boss. He said with Sadi, now he said with Shlosha. We like that.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't even realize that Shin could stand for Shlosha also. Okay, so I tend to think it means Shimon, but I admit I can't demonstrate it. I would have thought it would say Gimel. But we're doing the abbreviations are in the original, so I can't get past it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You won't get through.
If you look at just the face clause, like if you see the
it doesn't fit, because in the end he's going to say he the whole thing that he wants to divorce Afe Plata from Afe Mara. That's his whole project here, right? So to include the Heter of Afe Shlosha within the Heter of Afe Mara doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, that would make it look perfectly, because
that's right.
When you say you don't see who holds Afe Mara.
Okay, I can tell you that as soon as I said, it's Masa de Vejis, Zafad Shmo Israel, Nasa Bat Shin. There's only me as my mother just 300 years old. North. Here's a really annoying one. Here's a really annoying one. He has, I just also took it right. He has a Bat Gimel Shin.
Bat Gimel Shin?
Bat Gimel Shin. Okay. So I understand it, but I would say that's right. There are other cases where shin slash means Shimon is Judah, and there don't seem to be other cases where it means tree. So the reading is very clever. I would stick with Shimon, which then I have to figure out whether that previous reading stands up or not. all right. So, okay, even though somebody left with Michael's reading of this one. Now, I still think your previous reading about you know, the poor going to mention is the closest we have. Okay, Inami. Kishayel lahazir Adam, lo amar kloni ata davar zeh, ela bistam matiro afalti sheyomotav omro beferish. So what does that mean? Yes, Jesse.
Well, I'd say, I have to warn someone that built up the killer, or that built the killer. Right? And I can't, I'm allowed to tell him that. Straight up, I can just tell him that. But Rabbi Yossi would just say, you know, you should be careful of your life. That's how I tell him.
Someone's going to kill you.
Even though it's most over him to say specifically, the person who wants to damage you is this person, right? And therefore you should watch out for him. Rabbi Yossi wouldn't do that.
Okay, children are sons. So which word is Jesse mistranslating?
Matiro?
Yeah. What does Matiro mean? Very good. Right? Matiro does not mean to caution against. Matiro means to give yourself a cut.
So when he's talking to Shimon, he doesn't say, you shouldn't do this anymore. He just says this is the best thing to do.
Exactly right. That's right. That's why the faith is here, right? It's not a question of warnings. It's right. He's directed us for a
good
girl. Good. Okay. So Shimon is fun. Shimon is much more fun language than other things. Okay. So the, I probably shouldn't have put your name on tape. So that's it. Good recovery. Thankfully, recovery did. even face to face, he would never tell somebody they had done something wrong. He would just go on to an apparently irrelevant rant about, right? So he walked into a certain city in northern New Jersey and said, "You shouldn't use charity should not be used to launder money. I don't know why I'm saying it here."
Alright. Okay. Yeah. Look, imagine that is commonly done in a particular community.
Yeah.
You could say, you know, pulling in, you know, are buying meat from the trade butcher or something. Or you could say, there's a problem in this community with people buying meat from a trade butcher. I think that's a big difference.
Okay. That's fine. How does this fit into the hierarchy? Right? He's talking to the person faithfully. Right? And we're saying, right, which is perfectly moser. And he says, right, look at me, right? I never said anything to the Chazarti La Torah. And that means that even when talking to people's faces, I would never accuse them directly. How does that fit into the words of the Chazarti La Torah? Yes,
Deborah.
Is it possible that he's only applying the negative to the first half of
the
sentence? Whenever I talk to people, I did,
you know, look away from the speech. Somebody's
been reading too much in their telephone. What is it that you really read a lot of it, right?
It doesn't
work out. Oh, my God. Look, you're trying to think of it, Jamie, definitely talk to me. I can see this. I can see it. But really, we should say that sometimes you look away, and sometimes you look away. And sometimes that was... Okay. Yeah, as you said.
It's possible. And if you move back to the Rashi, but maybe it's even back to Jay, that if someone comes and asks, am I specifically talking about them, almost, I don't have to, you know, I can get them neutral enough that's true, but it doesn't necessarily have to be specifically about them.
So being somebody who's not willing to accuse people face to face, I managed to preserve my ability. Are you even going to be able to shift me? Okay. I have to say that would
You think you're in a situation, right? Okay. You know, for that example, you get multiple people involved. And if someone comes up to you and you're using your telephone business, because you tell me you can have possible bad ability
in public. But you said he's talking about, right? When he's talking to the person's face, if he's not about to be murdered.
Right, but also, there's obviously a cost of the private telephone.
So when a third party came up to him, he never had to deny it, but he could always claim I was just having a conversation with my friend X about municipal corruption.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a positive problem that I'm going to use. There's no singling out of something specific.
Okay.
We need to be rational. This is to follow the previous shot that is about other people competing.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know. I confess that like all these possibilities seem to have lost track of the text you're trying to interpret. That's all I can say. I don't have any better way. Yes, Justin.
I mean, even structurally, this last comment shows divorce from the reading of the Gemara, right? Because the Raya that is mutter, right, is that the Raya that what Rabbi Yossi is doing is mutter is the Koma with Midar Rav Emara, right? But that's backwards. No, according to Midar Rav Emara, is mutter because Rabbi Yossi made this statement.
No, I think the structural way of reading the Gemara, which I think is fun, he's saying is, Rava said, Kol Yossi Rav Emara is mutter. What's the evidence of this? Rabbi Yossi said he was doing something special. That means the thing Rabbi Yossi did must have two reasons to be mutter. Rabbi Yossi did must be a Rav Emara and something else, because of the reason. Right? Since the lesser Rabbi Yossi's statement already mutter, then he doesn't get credit for it. Right. And the only thing, it can only be a super mutter if it was already mutter because of Rava. That's the way you're reading Gemara structurally. But how he gets it to mean that, I am baffled. Okay, all this, generates a certain skepticism about his conclusion, but his conclusion is, of course, very dramatic. The conclusion is we don't need any of this. Now, we don't need this to do what?
Oscar Shiloh?
We only need this to pass in the Shiloh, okay? Right? So he tells you, his underlying problem here is that Rabbi Yossi seems to challenge his position that it's not usher to say truth of greatness, that it's not usher ever to say falsehood, to say truth. Okay, right? So right, you have to write the whole outruster. Right, the overarching structure is he said it's usher, right? He said truth is not a defense against the charge of Lashon Hara, and Rabbi Yossi, as he agrees, Red most simply believes that truth is the defense. Right? Like Rashi said, what Yossi means is, I never have to back down because I always said the truth. Okay, so in the end, so these are a series of deep stretches designed to make Rabbi Yossi compatible with him. Now, why he couldn't simply say Rabbi Yossi was willing to say truth to people's faces? And that's what it means, what he just is. That's what baffles me. Because it just says, of course truth is a defense, but Rabbi Yossi says that, it's truth is a defense, let's say it, truth is a defense, and Rabbi Yossi is a defense. Right, then what could Rabbi Yossi be possibly doing that was super legal?
Not saying truth is Rabbi Yossi.
Not saying truth,
but not saying why he's just not saying.
Yeah, not saying anything about Neymar ever. Never talking to people. I don't know. Okay.
His whole point is that truth, it's also for truth to be a defense, to be a defense. Truth is never
right. So let's say, if truth is mutter,
the truth is also according to him.
Yeah, so I don't understand what...
That's the whole problem with
Yossi,
right?
Truth is after according to Mara. That should be Mutter Dabimara, that's fine. Truth is Mutter. Truth is after generally, the Mutter Dabimara. And if Yossi...
Mara doesn't like that. That's his problem.
No, he wants truth to be after. You think he wants it to be after even Dabimara?
Yeah.
Why? That's not his question. Well, his question was, can you say truth about people, not can you say truth to people?
Right. Well, you're saying the answer is no, except off MR. He doesn't like that. Because again, I think it has to be going back to the structure of the Gemara, but it's weird, because the whole basis for the fact that you can, you certainly can't say chapter ever, right? So what is it that he was saying about Mara? It must have been truth. So how is it that that's impossible, because truth is author?
I confess that I am utterly baffled in how Mari Bar read the Gemara. But we'll get to the conclusion anyway. You know, the same dearly looks Tritino calls it. The little kind one tribute, Ellen kids of a skin of a pair of Cheska Tabatin, called Milton of its Amrit Afe Tlasa, Les Toisha Mishna Bisha. Okay, so the first thing you learn is that what's wrong with that statement?
That's a mutually exclusive.
Yeah, well, what's all the citation? What is Rabbi Yossi saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's just say that's all of it. Is it Afri Mora, Rabbi Yossi, Afri Tlasa? So why did he call Afri Tlasa if I said Kizabatis?
Shouldn't it be possible that he was supposed to be thinking about closing between the body and the other hand?
No. Now I'll point out that the footnote that he quotes Rabbi Yossi from Shabbos.
Yeah.
He quotes Rabbi Yossi from Shabbos, which is the independent context of Rabbi Yossi appears in a statement of Amar Rabbi Yossi. Right here?
I think what he's trying to do here is make Rabbi Yossi look as untenable of this position as possible. So that he basically has to wipe Rabbi Yossi out of the sugya, which means that he has to go to Grand Erechim and go back to Bava.
I wonder if he has Grand Erechim. I wonder. Other than Rashi's citation, I wonder if he has Grand Erechim. Either it is Gitta, or maybe he just doesn't have Grand Erechim, and he just doesn't know that the thing Rashi talks to appears. I really don't know. If he's forfeiting, maybe he's just missing that line. I don't know. It just sounds like, you know, somebody could get at least one graduate paper out of it. Does the Mari brother have it? Or does he have it? It's perfectly possible he had a Girsa, and that simply ended, right? Because the ending was simply ended after statement of Rain's paper of Jesse. It's probably, right? Perfectly plausible. Mike, what was your question? Okay, so granting that there is a way to solve it, though it'd be even cooler if we could figure out the text that made his reading of all this make sense independently. So what is he? So he claims that we don't hold like Rabbi Yossi at all. Rather, we hold up in plus. Now, why are these two in conflict? And what does it have to do with the truth of the defense?
Truth or defense, it should be Mutter Yimbabe even in front of one or two people.
But in front of three people, all of a sudden makes sense, this falsehood, right? The truth and defense.
Okay, that's the problem with it, right?
Yeah.
That if truth is a defense,
right,
then the defense, no matter how many people you say you state in front of.
Right.
And therefore the two statements must be mutually exclusive.
So it must be, so like, wait, he thinks that truth is not a defense even when you speak to the person directly. So we hold the Lashon Hara as authoring even, like, saying truth about people,
that's not part of their, that doesn't make sense.
It's author even to their face, and becomes mutter if you say it in front of three people, not to their face.
That's the part that doesn't make sense.
Well, I think
the
quality of business
you say,
so it's having a known fact.
So, okay. Now, when you say it's mutter in front of three people, it's mutter for the speaker or mutter for other people?
I think it's mutter for...
So if we take his first shot, we see that he thinks the head there is for other people. Alright, so he said...
He doesn't take what the terms. What did he get a officer in his shop?
So...
And he himself is of the job is not connected to the other, he doesn't feel any pressure to say, oh, I just never had to take head serve of the job because he just doesn't see him as being connected.
So, okay, is that not what you thought? Anything you say in front of three people or anything you repeat that was said in front of three people?
Well, I don't know, but I don't think that he's saying that if you say truth in front of a person, in front of the person you're saying it about, then it's Oscar. But if you say it all of a sudden in front of three, it's Oscar. It's just that minus the dialogue of Radiosity not taking the head serve, it looks like he's saying this is more than that. He never actually said it to
the other. That's right. So you can claim that say in front of the person is a certain thing in front of three people is also Oscar, but repeating it when he was said in front of three people is
Oscar. He said it in front of the person who's Oscar. And he just says that Radiosity doesn't take that.
No, we said the whole timeline of Biosi, Ella, Kida Taskina, and Kondos in the Tamarap is also. So what's the conflict in Biosi and Kondos in the Tamarap is also? When Biosi held up Imura, and nonetheless, right, and then went further, and didn't even take advantage of that Imura, but we don't hold that Biosi, we hold even up Imura is also. Because we hold only up is also as much. I think that's the watch it. All right. The only bad thing you should both believe those verbs to the Pirish Rashi, right? It's not, what we say is that it's usher to say three things, to say false things. What is already Pirish Rashi? What is that line? That line is Pirish. I don't know, leaking. No, that's not the one that writes in Kushi's cuts. Alright, so... But presumably that Rosh already it's okay. So what's the starting of Basra is what? So which Rosh are you talking about? I don't know. Yeah. Okay, Zafi Tosa. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay. El Afilu Zverma Mikim Lo Yomar. So you shouldn't even say it's truth. Okay, unless it's in front of three people, I guess, right? Unless it's been repeated in front of three people? I feel it, right? So, okay, so I confess, we're largely baffled entirely by some logic. We have to figure out what you do with it. I feel the host of the document that shot you, William Arponi, also William Arnibal, now where did this come from? Holy new thing, right? Even to remove yourself from suspicion, you should never say, they found the ban against saying the truth, he now extends it, applies not only to causelessly saying the truth, but even saying the truth in order to remove suspicion from yourself. Okay, do this, he quotes the test, but I only found it so far in Hagos Hasheri. Right, which says, if something was done not at the Chacham's wish, and he thinks that you did it, then you shouldn't say who did it, rather you should say, I didn't do it. This presumably comes from that story of the baguette, right, where Rabbi says to the student, right, who wrote this get? He says, I didn't, someone said it. He says, right, what is Kalech will come to the center of that. Right, so, right, so we learn from that even truth is no defense, even if the purpose of truth is to shake suspicion from yourself, you should just deny it, even though that presumably limits the effect of your denial. It's always better to have someone else to blame it on. At least this seems to be one of the principles of Cyrenaicism. Right, always find somebody else who is ready to you can depend on. The thing that right, that's what's right. Depending on the Shabbat Siva, Ema Matoni Kato Shem Mitzel Shmachro Validate, right. I mean, the reason for this, I'm sorry, he also talks about you shouldn't say the positive becomes a negative. However, Even though you shouldn't say bad things to other people to separate yourself from chashad, you should always avoid chashad because it's permitted to be chashad people if they do things that are obviously chashad. And he goes through a whole series of cases that tell you that it's in fact important to avoid chashad and not at the expense of lashon hara. All right.
So this is the sort of baffling truth. What you get is,
as all you want to show us, baffling.
Well, so you look at structurally, what he does is,
right,
what he does, you know, this is somebody who states explicitly that he's not starting from the text. Right, he's starting from the answer. Right, so this is one form, right? Here, he frames the question the way he wants to frame the question, right? So you don't lose track of what he's doing. Right? He frames the question is, here's truth of defense. The answer is no. Okay, and then his style is, okay, right, so, look, here's something you might think, right, you might think is a challenge to that. No. I have a whole series of responses to that. I don't think that's a challenge. On the assumption everybody knows it's a good, right, and would think of the challenges immediately. And then when you're not noticing so much, he extends his argument to a new point and claims even though he's not on a shot. I have to say, I think this would have been much more effective if he had just started off by quoting that claim. You can't even say the truth to deflect shots from yourself. And so I'm not at all sure this is an example of a good style. Okay, I also wanted to just give you the option, right? Because he just preserves himself the option of saying, guess what? We don't populate it, but they're in the state of the Gemara. Right, here's a sugya that looks to you, here's a sheet that looks problematic for my thesis. So what? Right, we'll just, and we've got another sugya somewhere, we'll just talk to you like that one against this one. So in case you think that that's, you know, a radical notion, I think John said in this conversation earlier, but what is... Okay, well, this other thing doesn't reflect the sheet explicitly, so here we go. We have no tana about disagreeing with him. What we have is the Amara Rama Dara with us. But, so what? Okay. I would say that when Shuna is this baffling, it means that we're missing something. That would be my take. You know, people make it into the canon because they're smart, and when you find yourself utterly incapable of understanding anything they say, it probably means that we're missing something. My suspicion is that we really have to do this to figure out what text he has. And my suspicion is that we can figure out what text he has. It's too baffling. It's too far off. It's hard to say, the gap is just too large. I can't write. I tend to be charitable and assume that if I find someone utterly incomprehensible, then it must be my misunderstanding, not that they're saying something absurd. Yes.
And could it just be that he has a very, very strong Archimedean point? To the point where he's willing to read things in ways that are all difficult, so that's quite simple.
If he had bad arguments, that would be fine. But we're not looking at anything that's a bad argument. We understand that it's a bad argument. We're looking, we can't fit in language and maybe that makes sense. Right? It doesn't cohere. It's the only issue with the correspondence. It doesn't mean to fit in the language, that'd be fine. It doesn't cohere in any way. Right? His language, right? He seems to continue to say reverse things. Now,
he's not cool either.
No, he's not cool either. It's just like, all over the place. You have to know it because in the collection that she quote, you have to know there is a Rishon who says that we don't talk like Rabbi Yossi because Rabbi Yossi contradicts the vision of Rabbi Yossi. Now, if we were only conscious of the Prisca, we would just play with it. Well, there's a spirit between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi. Well, we can make whatever we want with that. This is a text that is very hard to defend itself against anything. But if you wish to write a shiva like that, I would say hard best to argue, no, he doesn't mean that, he means something else. Alright.
What did you do if this, you were dealing with an issue where this was the fundamental truth of anything?
I don't know. I think I would, first of all, I spent a very, very long time just trying to figure out this shiva. I would probably translate the shiva line by line, which I still haven't had time to do, but kind of what I really want to do. As to start that, I would go back and line up all the manuscripts on screen and see if I could do it.
You have to, what happens at the end of it, I understand this Shiva no better than I, than I understand this Shiva. I think it would very much depend on whether I found the conclusion plausible or not. If the conclusion were plausible, it was just that we have to take precedence, and if not, we can't do anything else. The conclusion were right, the implausible, I would say clearly that this is, like, clearly this truly can't be taken into account because it's incomprehensible. And so, I go back to Gemara. I think if it were really impossible, if not only was its argument incomprehensible, but its conclusion was unbearable, I would just go back to Gemara and say that clearly something isn't badly messed up here. I think that would be the one. Or, you know, you meant it like crazy, so it makes sense. I'd rather not do that, you know, because I have no basis for doing that. Okay, so we get to the trivial claim to all. This is just on what we're doing. This is a trivial which is purely London, right? This is part of the genre of people just writing letters back to each other, right? You know, being Mishashaya, the Tom the Torah. Okay, right, so this is on the Rambam. Right, this is on the Rambam, Perek Zayin of, Perek Zayin of Hilchos Be'ot. The question is, why does the Rambam not paskin, not paskin like the, why does the Rambam not paskin the Afei Mara's Mutter? Okay, now, this is the same Lundish position that the, eventually, that the Rebbe got to, which is just to say that we don't talk about him now. Right, so what are they talking about, Grava? The answer is the Pichadish Ruth, but he wrote like the Brightest Torah brought in, which the Rosh brings in the 12th Prayer of the Gaim, where we quote Miriam, and that Brightest supports the Bayit, okay? So we learn it as the principle of Maskara is my focus between the position put the Lishna Disha. Right, not with the Lishna Disha. Right, and the Brisa of Miriam, which we thought was just, you know, family for all sorts of defenses, it turned out the Pritzadis already quoted it as a proof that it's not going to like it by that the Talmud is Tolshe came. Okay, but now, right, we just plain it out. If that Brisa is so clearly a support for Abaye, then why doesn't the Gemara quote it? Okay? The answer is, of course, because that Brisa just holds like Rabbi Yossi. And so really, we've already rejected the Brisa. There's no point in quoting that Brisa, because if we quoted that Brisa, the Shalom Rabbi, he would just say, oh, because he has that Brisa. So the question is, why didn't Abaye, or why didn't Gemara explicitly use that? The answer is, that's right, my fault. The reason it doesn't do it, give me a claim that that Brisa only supports Rabbi Yossi. Right, how would that help?
No, it would do it first, because then you would have Rabbi Yossi versus the Craig, Tom Sopranes and Yehuda.
The answer is, if you're going to claim the reason that Gemara didn't challenge Rava from the Brisa is that Rava would just have said that I hold like Rabbi Yossi against this Brisa. And that would explain why the Brisa doesn't quote the Brisa, and therefore the Rambam can still believe that the Brisa supports the Baye and use the Brisa to talk about the Baye of Jehovah. Do you guys all get this? Do you guys follow why this is a kasha? Let's do it one more time. Okay, this is complicated. The initial problem is, why does the Rambam paskin against Rava?
Okay, the answer is the Rambam paskins against Rava because he has a brisa in the Sifrei. So the problem is, if that brisa in the Sifrei is really against Rava, why is the Gemara quoted? The fact that the Gemara doesn't quote it proves that it's really not against Rava, and therefore that can't be the reason the Rambam paskins against Rava. So you might say, no, the reason the Gemara doesn't quote this brisa, which really is against Rava, to attack Rava, is because the Gemara knew that Rava would respond, oh, you're right, that price is against me, and I hold like Rabbi Yossi. And therefore the price that really is against Rava, and Rava is entitled to Paskin against Rava on the basis of the price. No, you can't say that, because if the Gemara's reason for not quoting the Brisa is that Rava would have responded, I don't hold like that price, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, then the Rava would have been compelled to Paskin like Rava. Right, because then Rava would have had the winning side, because Rava would have been like Rabbi Yossi against Rabbi Yehuda, and Rava against the Bias. Right, so therefore you can't explain the Rambam by saying the Rambam is quoting like a Bias that Gemara didn't quote. Okay?
So we have a situation where basically, if that
price is
brought in...
Here's your soft part, yeah. I really should have a soft part, yeah.
So basically you'd end up with two winners on the same side, and that would be too much
of a
problem, or
it's... So the round is only... the key to understand here is that by the rules of the game, the round cannot paskin like against Rava because of the brisa, which the Gemara was not willing to quote against Rava.
And even if the Gemara did quote against Rava, then he could...
No, that's right again. He has to explain, his thesis has to be that this price is against Rava. But then he has to explain, if it's against Rava, why the Gemara doesn't quote it. You're not allowed to say the Gemara didn't know it.
Right.
Okay, so he's caught in the catch-22. Right, the only reason he can only paskin against Rava if he has a kushya on Rava, but there also has to be a reason the Gemara wasn't willing to ask that kushya. Whatever reason the Gemara is not asking the kushya, presumably because Rava had a good answer, and then he has to paskin like Rava again. Right, so he has to amaze. Right, he has to do this catch-22. So the solution is, without the tosos of the shatir, they have rights to be good. Anybody know what that's talking about?
Presumably, the same exact rules that the Chalakai wanted to do to me out here, but this meant the case of Rava and Abaye is by ambiguous things. The right eye assess the prey is by actual negative information. The actual negative information also can put the volition of each on its horse, and not above this horse. But neutral information, like...
Okay.
The
exact thing
was about times up, you're not
going
to
do sources. Okay, right, so a nice solution is to claim that Rava and Abaye are only talking about ambiguous words, and the Bryce is talking about obviously negative words, and so obviously negative words are supposed to the solution of Disha. So who is this answering for? What is Asya chapter?
So therefore, the Rambam, by not recording
Rabbi
Yossi, he doesn't have to,
Rabbi
Yossi isn't actually providing a head there.
He doesn't like stopping Mara to get Rabbi Yossi.
Stopping
Mara is... Rabbi Mara is Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi is just a defense of that.
Right. Because,
in the end
of the day, it's only a way
to
clarify what is and what is not considered to be
known,
indicating ambiguous words, which the
Rabbi
can just assume under describing what
Hashem already
is.
Okay, the answer is Rabbi has to believe that Rabbi, in fact, does talk enough in Mara's mutter. Right, that's the answer in the end. Rambam does talk like Rava.
The Rambam would therefore talk like Rava. It's not an actual talk. It's just telling you, the second you say that Rava is not providing a head there, but rather providing a means by which we can clarify something which is unclear, and the Rambam gives definitions as to what type of speech is and is not considered Rosh Hashanah, you can get around the Rambam open explicitly stating anything which is... Right, the second Abi Mara is just a synonym for something else, namely that you didn't mean it for use, Rama can consume it through his more full-on definition.
Maybe. Okay, I'm not so sure that's what you're going to expect, but I'll always get that one if you're not going to get the Rama. The actual Rama are to sever our Rama, the Ikanura have the collection of her of the Rama, Ulaki Yishmito, the Sphere Lake Katsotsuk, the call of Black Lashon Hara, Ksav Lashon Hara, Ksav Lashon Hara, Ksav Lashon Hara, Ksav Lashon Hara, the summer even knew about that, and we should not be cut to Lashon Hara, the Panav, the Ksav Lashon Hara, the Ksav Lashon Hara, the Ksav Lashon Hara, the Ksav Lashon Hara, I think, you know, I think I did wrong. It should be one answer, not two.
Right,
okay, good. Yeah, it should all be, right, this is my fault. It should all be, like, some, well, not the Tosin is all one big parrot, because Jonathan's right. And the whole point is that maybe the Ram holds like Tosin, and Ram holds like Tosin, and he can't hold like Rava, and if he holds like Rava, then, right, so then we end up with a Kiddush, which says that which is based on Tosfos, right? So a lap Lashon Hara is mutter, and a regular Lashon Hara is after being defined and based on the Panav.
Okay.
Mostly the Panav was just to get the question. Right, to understand that, right, to understand how it plays out. Okay, then we have the Rambam, who spends a really long time of trying to prove to you that it's mutter with a pair Lashon Hara is Nehar Shalom. A really long, very involved time. Now, the first thing is, this seems Lekora like a kasha in Lachan. Right? Because why did he have to go through it? There was nothing to show on. There was nothing to withdraw. First of all, he doesn't seem to say life is, why is it kasha in Lachan?
The Lachan also has a when he gets here, the seventh contest, but still he has a blanket headdress for Lashon Hara, the toilet.
Okay.
So what you want to say that, yeah, that you have to prove each individual toilet individually, well, that's great, that's what it sometimes does. So,
okay. So the bottom line, though, is that this is not a serious truth. Let me be my favorite. I'm not an example of wild. It's a very famous truth. I think people try and reconstruct what exactly the historical circumstance is that he's talking about. Where the Ramah obviously engaged in Lashon Hara in the hopes of bringing criminal peace and failed miserably. Such that at the end of it, he has to write a letter desperately defending himself against the accusation of Lashon Hara, saying, but I meant it for peace, but it really, really didn't work. It really, really didn't work. That's the, you know, the history you can get of this Shiva is that this was a disaster. So that he thought by saying Lashon Hara about one side or the other, he would bring it back. But, you know, to my mind, this is a game. He ends up with these wild conditions, right, that there are places where speech is mutter, and the consequences of the speech are just, so even if you're actually doing a masa, but once you said the Lashon Hara, then doing an action which is a natural consequence of Lashon Hara is not, so it ends up with a really big fish in terms of the Hargel Yavor. Right, that it's mutter. It's not mutter to hand somebody over, but it's mutter to agree to hand somebody over. Right? But it's not Mishnah Chassidim. Right? If it's not Mishnah Chassidim, Chassidim don't get involved in this. And that was also important for me to point out to you. Here we have somebody acknowledging that there are things which are okay to do. He seems to have defended himself having done them. And he said, okay, that even though it wasn't the case, it was Mishnah Chassid. Okay, we could spend some time at some point going through the arguments in detail. I have to say that I can't take the argument seriously. I think this Ramah is a game, and it's a game played for pure historical effect, since we don't have the historical context, we don't know what it is, but I can't imagine anyone ever took his argument as anything resembling a halachic argument.
But it does not.
It's quoted to you because you should be aware, I think, that sometimes children are games and this is a game. Maybe a little bit later, you know, I can demonstrate to you why. But this, you know, you can't make this connection to you. He starts off by playing a game and says, don't worry, if you do Kalvachomer, you understand why you can't have sex without this. And it's what he says. and he turns it into, and they have to question the Hermit Bell Yavar, and he gets out of the Hermit Bell Yavar with the, an idea, well, Yimtru, the Lama of Weiznu, which is a very fine Hermit idea, which extends, which you know, is like the Alba Yoshi by another, right, so they didn't extend it to something, they have that. But if you really get a hold of Halacha, that where it's Aser to, where it's Aser to give somebody over is permitted to accommodate so long as you're not physically to hand over, it's very, very hard.
So, again, can we use this story for
Right, so the Joel Medrash Kliya is, you made out the Medrash, and then you explained it. Right, that was a common way, Gretchen Lyman claimed that the introduction, I think, to the Detroit Citroën, I think, which has the Medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu looking like a murderer. So I think Gretchen Lyman just claimed that he just made it up so he could explain it. The famous introduction to the Tour, which says that there are really, there are three positions as to what the Kabbalah of the Torah is. Right, one is, one is Akhliyat HaKalocha, one is the Kelly Kibra Zadam, and the third one is the Kevin Tefasha Tevavogir, and Mr. Lyman claims that one is also... Yeah, Sargent Yaakov, thank you, right. Right, so the Mr. Lyman claims that one's also made up, and that was just the genre. I can't tell you. I can't tell you that this way I would just testify that somebody did this to the rug. Asking the question, gave a long explanation to the head of the puzzle. You're allowed to have the claim that somebody's nourishing an imaginary subject. It takes a lot. People play games. People play games. That's true to me as a game. Okay, that leaves us with three shows, which are actually much, which start to get to the stuff at this point. So far we're dealing with trying to final issues, and both style of truth and style of learning, right? Because I feel in principle I want to do something that comes, something freshman oriented every summer. Doesn't really have any experience in constructing that kind of blend. Okay, so let's have two shoes. We deal with very practical questions of school discipline. Right? So the question is, are you allowed to do the shtick where you say, I don't know who did this, I would like somebody to come forward and tell me? Mm-hmm. Or, more radically, what is the position of religious Judaism about honor system schools? Where students are expected to inform on each other for violation of the rules. Yes,
it sounded to me like it was a much stronger formulation where he's asking, maybe the teacher's even going to punish them all if one of them doesn't come forward. Or he's trying to set up a situation where, he didn't say it explicitly, but the whole thing is that you're trying to force a situation whereby the students will be compelled to inform on each other.
In the first case, he's talking about compulsion. In the first case, it's just talking about, I tell you that each of you really gets up in class and say, I need to know who this is. I know there's any explicit threat or all of you die. Right? I need to know who this is. Now, this is a very common, when you have
something done wrong in the school, and the normal, right, and you don't know who it is, so you have a bunch of possibilities. You can say, I want the person who did this to tell me privately.
You can say, I want anyone who knows who did it to tell me. Or you can try and launch a forensic investigation, but there are not so many forensic investigatory tools available in school.
can lock everyone in the room if they're not leaving until...
You can lock everyone in the room or if they're not leaving until somebody confesses.
Right, or until somebody tells you to do this. Right? This is a specific experience that Daniel and I have shared. This is cool.
I'll never
admit that Daniel
locked
you in the room. Eventually, I can say. So Ravesha says this is wrong. Ravesha says it's wrong to get students to inform on each other on circumstances like this. Carl, what do you want to say? So what do you guys think? If you raise, what do you think of his argument? What do you think, right? What do you think of that as a... Okay, yes, Rob.
I love the moral behind it, and in an ideal society, I think it's great. At the same time, though, it means that while one could have made a huge Tolelic argument saying that it's important for, you know, people to not be able to get away with, you know, doing whatever in school,
yeah.
He's basically saying that he doesn't care about that, and that the moral, teaching moral integrity is more important than making sure that people are held accountable for their actions.
So let's frame this, right? Which region is he following down the line? Who would have said the exact same thing as the Rambam?
The Rambam.
The Rambam doesn't have an answer with all of us. Right? Because the Rambam is only interested in virtue.
Right.
Right? So virtue makes a straight virtue argument. Right? That the loving heart is bad for you. Not because it's bad to the other person, because it's very easy to make an argument that it's good for the other person. They get to Okaka. It's good for society. Other people are intimidated. Right? And Russia makes no argument. He freely concedes that from a utilitarian consequentialist perspective, meaning, you know, external consequences, right? This works. This is Mutter. He doesn't in any way suggest that it's up to the teacher to say this. What it would be up to the students to say it. He just says that this is a bad move. This is a bad move, right? This is like the Eliyahu coming to Yeshua and saying, I don't care if it's mutter or not, this is not what good people do. Okay? And there are a number of stories like that, particularly about people who serve as informants of Romans. I know, because we're talking about, often talking about dialogue between, right? Friend?
Or modern day informants. I just couldn't stop talking to people
I'm not sure where that's in. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the... So, what do you guys think of... Do you like his argument? Do you think he's right? That this is an illegitimate pedagogic technique?
I don't know. It's hard because it's so ingrained in me. From having seen it, you know, in non-Jewish schools mostly. I think that he's right in terms of the virtue argument, and I don't think this is something we should be teaching your kids. At the same time, I also think that it's going to depend on what the thing is and how important it is to find out who did it.
Okay, so you could have done it.
Pardon? We make that call.
I think that's hard to say that. Certainly when you're talking about something that becomes a criminal investigation, something where it's outside the jurisdiction of the school, where something where someone is posing a real serious danger to other people, obviously, what are some other mechanisms for figuring out that?
What are we talking about with vandals?
She needs a big one, right? I think there's three types of situations. One is a ad hoc situation, right? Something is only you want to find out, and the other, I think, which is really worth thinking about, like an honor system is not designed to train characters. Right? So it's really interesting. This sounds like somebody should get a paper out of it for a graduate school education. Right? So think about, like, the tensions between Zofa Flesh and Hara.
and the whole notion of ownership, whether we think that it's bad for character. I have to say that this is, you know, kind of a funny thing for me to realize, because I have an instinctive liking of honor systems. But that's because I have a counter. I have a counter ethical argument, virtual argument, which is that it's very easy for a hypersensitive and hypersensitive culture to turn everyone into accessories. Right, it really is. Right, it really is. And I think I think Ravosha assumes a basically good society. Right, that was right. So you're talking about somebody did one thing wrong once. So you have to trust the authorities to handle that, as opposed to pervasive failure. Yes, sir.
I think it's primary to think that if you don't let them stay up to her, by the honor system, then we won't have anything else in our house. Because they're going to stay up to her regardless. You might as well, in that scenario, teach them how to stay in a good way.
Do you want to ask kids to stay up to her?
If you teach them how to use speech in a way that's positive, then yes.
Jesse, what do you guys think?
So I think that, furthermore, I don't know exactly what the Shiloh is responding to, right? He doesn't give us the exact question. He may have a very narrow situation he's responding to. I think that it's important to recognize that there are situations in which what he's suggesting is true, right? And we do not want to encourage kids to, shamelessly become tattletales and to, constantly be competing with each other to see who can get in the teacher's favor the most by telling on their fellow students, which happens, right? You have people like this, right? And you play these games back and forth between the teachers and the students and pit people against each other. These things happen. At the same time, right, he may or may not, I do not know, he uses very strong language, as the Barnacle are, so maybe he thinks this is true in all situations. At the same time, it's possible, I'm just going to say this, maybe he doesn't believe this, but there are also cases where, it's really valuable for students to know that they need to go to the authorities and say something. I think this is the value of the honor system, right? The honor system is not that does not train you in virtue by saying every time someone does something wrong, they need to go to the authorities. The value of the educational value of the honor system is that it forces the kids, and hopefully, to be accountable to each other and to the authorities exactly, so that they make the calculation. You know what? Sometimes it's important to go to the teacher, sometimes it's not. And sometimes, when they put you all in the room and say, Tell me who did X, right? And that the person who did X is going to get a disproportionate punishment. Maybe it's up to you to stand up and say, I did X. I mean, so I think the honor system puts you in positions where it forces you to take account of your actions and your peers' actions in a powerful way. And it's not clear to me that he necessarily rejects that. Although, I don't know what question he's answering. Although, for all I know, the Devar Mekor is the specific situation which he was presented. And in another case, it might not be. I think that, in general, is sometimes the trouble with Ramosha Tshuva, that we don't have the Shiloh most of the time. He summarizes the Shiloh, and we don't know exactly what
he's saying. Well, I think the Shiloh is generic.
Which presented
is
generically. It doesn't mean...
I think it's generic, but I don't know if our system might not change it by creating a different cultural expectation.
I think his central point is a very important point. Is it true in all situations? Not necessarily, but that doesn't mean that he might not think that it's true in all situations. That's all.
Okay, Daniel, what do you want to say?
I'm not sure how right? That was I kind of felt that this was also partially one of his values here was being protecting, or not protecting, but limiting the teacher's abusive ability to personally set students against each other and to create these situations. And it's more like, you as a teacher shouldn't be doing this. You should leave yourself open so they can come to you and tell you when something bad happens, but you shouldn't be the one to demand this of them and to put them under these situations, because it's also bad for you as a person to do something like that.
Interesting. I think he is more, I'm not sure I get the second half, I think he is more open to the possibility that students might decide on their own. It's the notion of mandating informants that really gets to him. I think that was, again, the furthest I'm not sure I would go that far. Yes, Tom?
I'm just trying to understand from a larger scale of shuvot, how they work. Where does where is the authority derived from in this text? Meaning, aside from him being Rav Moshe Feinstein, we attribute a lot to him. It's just like, because in the end, I mean, it doesn't want to say anything more than it's just wrong, or just don't do this. And then we just respect those words because we respect him as a teacher and the Lata and the...
Well, we trust that he has Gemara, and in fact he does, right? We, you know, because we did, right? That we saw the previous Tshuva, right, in which... Right, we asked you that people, you know, like God looking at, you know, at the term dilator, right, dilator, which is informant, in the Vedic literature, the term of great appropriate. And they have a concept of Moses. Right, so I think that anyone asking him this question is asking him to bear his values.
Okay.
And where he's using his authority is to tell you that
he's already come to a good decision, but didn't
take. He's telling you that I'm telling you what to do, even though I can't mandate it.
Okay.
Right, that's the thing, he doesn't have to do it. I think emotions tend to be very honest that way. Right? A less honest Tosek would say it's up there. Right, he doesn't do that. I think it's a very bad idea. Yes, sir.
The other thing is also we see from the disposition of these two Chuvot, it sounds like he made his ruling, he gave his actual advice, and he was challenged. Yeah. And he comes back, and he still doesn't even bring significant makoros in his response. He brings one cup of chayim, and I believe for the response, this is the entirety of the Tshuva. The first one, there was a little bit more in the beginning, setting up the question of that one. But this is basically all he says in the second one. So he really, even in his response, he doesn't consider it to be important to bring text to support his...
I mean, you think this is a counter-text. This is the point there are many Tshuvas. Right, many Tshuvot. Yeah, to me, the place that is most clear to me is within my analysis of the on autopsies. Many Tshuvot, and you saw it again, the first Tshuva as well, many Tshuvot start with the conclusion, and their only job is to make sure that you have no compelling challenges. Right, many Tshuvot do not seek to convince you that this is what the text means. They seek to convince you that it's possible this is what the text means, and if it's possible this is what the text means, then you rest in my authority. Right, some Tshuvot set out to convince you that this is great, that they have proof, and other Tshuvot assume that proof is not a relevant category, all they have to do is make sure there's no counter-proof. The notion here, I think, is, you know, as with most of the previous Tshuvot, and it's not trying to, the person assumes you ask me the question, if you ask me the question, then I have authority. Right, all I have to do is make this demonstrate to you that I'm not being, it's like a formal way of framing it, right? Hold on, right? That in order for a decision to be reversible halakhically, it has to be an error. Right? It does, right? And in order to be reversible with cost, it has to be a demonstrable error. Right? We call Talmud of our mission. If it was a text, I should have known that I didn't. So all you need to do is to reach the threshold of bindingness in halakhic court is to demonstrate that you didn't make an error, not to show me you're right. The standard is lack of error. Now,
you already have authority.
Once you already have authority, because they asked you the question.
Why did you get that authority?
Because they chose to ask you the question.
So, tons of people ask you tons of questions.
That's right. That's right. The more people ask you questions, the more authority you have. Now, you might suddenly have to acknowledge, you have to recognize that sometimes people ask you a question, and they're really asking six other people the question at the same time. Right? And when doing that, right, so it's great, it feels great, five people are just wandering around, going from person to person, asking, right, and then you have to prove your point.
But in fact, it is the case often when somebody asks you a shaila that they're assuming that they trust your answer. They're not asking with intellectual, right? They're asking for your judgment. The only issue is that they know that if they're online, right, they know certain skills. So you give them an answer, they think it's impossible. Particularly, often people ask you the shaylas because they know enough to recognize that this is a real problem. But if you just say yes to them, they're going to suspect that you're just a softie. So when they ask you a question, right, so you know that they're asking the question because they know the Gemara that seems to them to make the answer they want impossible. And so you give them the answer, you have to explain to them how you read that Gemara, because otherwise they're not going to use your answer anyway. Right, yes, John?
Aren't there a lot of Chuvah studying this that we assume there never actually was a real question, and that the folks just kind of made up the questions?
And most of those, I think you'll discover, are less, right, are more offensive. In a sense, right, those of those will try to prove their point. As opposed to just studying, I think. Although you can always claim, you know, that the nice rhetorical strategy to render the truth.
Right. And that way you can play defense as opposed to, and so often. But I think that, I suspect that if I look at it, I'll discover more and more that many Chuvah play defense. But again, that's because the person granted you the authority, you have to know how far that authority goes. Right? Because if you presume on that authority, if Ramosha would ask this question, he gave his answer. And it turned out the person who asked the question had no interest in his opinion. They really just want to know what halacha was, and this is just not going to work. And it only works if people are interested in his opinion. Okay, I got this. Don, did you have a question? No. So, Rob, yeah.
So then this only works if you're a host. You can never, as a lay person, who people come to ask you for halachic advice because you're a respected member of the community or something like that, but not an actual authority. If you know that about that you have a certain position in the community, then you would not be able to do this sort of a rhetorical style of saying and role.
Well, I don't know what, you know, supposedly means. I think that everyone, you know, you're a doctor, right? And you can ask your doctor one or two questions. You can ask your doctor, will this kill me? Right? And you're not going to, all of a sudden your doctor will say it's not going to kill you. But I think, in the long run, this is a very bad idea. And some patients will listen. And some patients will say, that's not your business, right? Your business will kill me or not.
Okay, let's say you're in a community where it's clear that there are other people also ask questions of as well.
Right.
And that basically people are just kind of fishing around to get different perspectives and then, you know, either to kind of shop around for the answer they want or to try and come up with some sort of reconciliation of the different positions they could in the community. So in that sort of situation, you would not be able to make this sort of defense claim.
Well, so let's talk about the Retora. I don't know if you guys read this Retora or not. The Retora I sent out this week, I hope you do, was about racism, the issue of Talyuris. Right, so this is an issue where if people ask you the question on the presumption that your moral assertions matter to them, then a plausible answer, right, then all you have to do to answer the question, is racist speech out there, is say yes, and then distinguish all the possible and say, right, somebody might say that it doesn't apply, right, it doesn't apply to non-Jews, but here's the way to get out of any figure that might apply, doesn't apply to non-Jews. That works when the community accepts your authority.
Right.
But if you're writing this to a community that doesn't automatically think it should be wrong, that doesn't, right, that doesn't share the assertions, then that's useless. Right? But you've shown it's possible, that's not the issue they need, right? They need to be shown the opposite is impossible. Right, and that's what we have a problem with. We don't have enough text right now, but I would certainly, if I were writing a chula to that community, I would do my darndest to, right, to construct it as a formal logic argument. Whereas if I write a community like Yan Academy, so the real issue would be to, right, all they want to know is that it's possible for all of them to agree with them. I don't have to prove it, right, in that sense. Right, it's a different environment. I think you have to be very conscious of, you can say this more broadly and say, the question, you have to be very conscious whether you're responding to a question in a situation where people want the answer you're giving, they just need to be assured that it fits within the service, or where people really don't want the answer
right? Really don't want the answer you're giving, in which case you have to demonstrate that it's part of it, right? You have to demonstrate that it has to be that way in the third. No, that's right. Yeah, you know, underlying way of framing it is, are you responding to a community which shares your moral and religious assumptions or not? Right? If you're responding to a community that doesn't share your moral assumptions, then you really have to make your argument as formalistically as, and not only formalistically, you have to make your argument as demonstrative as possible. Because if somebody writes, for example, you know, I don't know, somebody who you know has a really deep conviction that the animals have no rights, and they write to you and ask you, and they ask you, is there a section out there, right? Section out there, you know, how much of our biological knowledge comes by doing horrible things to animals while they were alive. To recognize that we don't know what to do anymore, but much of what we know, the circulatory system, all things like that, comes.
We use
our organisms for everything. We use your heart. I mean, the standard
experiments
that we
can autopilot is showing
it's really you want to write, show that to others. So, to somebody who, really doesn't care about animals. Really doesn't care about animals. But you really have to make a formal argument about that about paying. And you can't just, the underlying feeling, but this is just wrong. Recognize the sanctity of life, all sorts of things, isn't going to work. Right, you have to make an argument in the top of time, and very likely you have to make the argument on explicit virtue grounds that it's bad to your character. Of course, there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever, but over time it's bad to your character because you might end up being bad to flowers too. Right? Or even being, but every day the person thinks I'm more valuable. I think you have to be really conscious and then figure out what kind of mood. It might be that you have a pedagogic intent if you think that a community you're writing to has become excessively analogous. So that, right, you think that part of the flaw of this community is that it believes that nothing is wrong unless it's out there. Then you might write a chuva which says, I could write a formal chuva saying it was out there, but that would just reinforce your twisted conception of Judaism. So I'm not going to, I'm just going to tell you it's wrong. And if you don't know it's wrong, if you can't understand that it's wrong, then everything else I teach you will be distorted anyway. Right? So, you can, that's also a legitimate rhetorical strategy. And I want to understand that writing a chuva, writing a chuva is not an intellectual activity. Coming to a response might be an intellectual community, but writing a chuva is a rhetorical activity. Meaning that it's a didactic, pedagogic, right, seeking to educate the person. The answer you can always give by saying yes or no. Right. But how to write the chuva is always a rhetorical decision, and like any other form of rhetoric, right, there are rules and there are techniques. You have to be able to use them. Yes, sir.
Does giving a chuva, isn't it different here to consider the person and their background and your relationship to them when giving the chuva?
When answering a shayla, certainly. By writing a chuva, you have to figure out not just the person you're answering, but who else is waiting. You have to think about the community, not just... Unless you're writing a personal letter, right, and you want to be burned afterwards. But usually, that doesn't happen. At the very least, it's going to take... Right, anything matters is going to come out posthumously. Right, there'll be lots of big books, right, the wealthy positions of books. So I think you always... It's always safer to assume it's going to come out, and usually it's usually not trying to ensure confidentiality because it's very hard to keep chuva confidential. So you have to consider the background of the person. Also, by thinking about his background, you have to think about moral assumptions, long term good, and often when you're writing a chuva, often you have to assume it's going to be published. I think that would be the anything in writing is likely to get out. Okay, that brings us to the last chuva, which is the system of the about secretaries. Now that is an issue that it's just filling out, it's supporting the previous one. But the system of the deals with the question of whether a doctor can tell his secretary that such a patient is sick. And generally, that in general to the question, right, can medical offices function? Right, if every person is bound by confidentiality, then offices can't function. Schools can't function. No institution larger than one person can ever function. Mm-hmm. And the answer to it philosophically is it has to function. It has to function, right? It is true as a very valuable issue, right? Again, I think there's nothing resembling a textual argument in that truth. There's nothing resembling a textual discussion in the truth. It just says, look, this is the way it is. These things have to work, so obviously it's not their goal. Now, that's always an interesting phenomenon, whether that ought to be, or whether it ought to be or not. The mashal that I always like quoting about this is Eid Echad, right, where Rashi says, Eid Echad, Neman Vissur, it has to work, because otherwise men couldn't eat their wives cooking. Right? And Tassi Shana Das says, so if it were us, their men wouldn't eat their wives cooking, they would cook. Right, you know, so then the question is, what are the assumptions of a society that you take as a given? Right, so you're saying halacha can't change. Right, this ties into my conception of a normal life. Right, what are the givens that we're not going to bother saying halacha has to challenge? So Sufism assumes that we are not going to revert to a model in which the patient has to. Now he could have told the technical way. He could have said that it's required in Israel that every patient sign a form stating that everyone there has permission, and he could have made a very technical argument arguing that permission is sufficient to be master all lashon hara, or at least to be master all lashon hara that held, right? Because the patient is entitled to make an argument that they feel this is what's well. He could have made a very elaborate argument like that. He could have not bothered with not having come with that long argument, then said, and since this is the way the world is, therefore there's an implicit for our life that for everyone walking into medical things, we don't need the form anymore. Right? He could have read all sorts of formal ways which he could construct, and he doesn't bother. Because he just...
No, it doesn't make any sense to me, I don't need that.
Okay, yeah.
He says that, you know, there's the simple construction
to pay off. Right, he tries that, and at the end he says, no, you know, just this has to work.
Yeah.
This has to work. We can't let patients walk in and demand that doctors do all the paperwork themselves. Right? It's just not, right? It just can't happen. So, this to me, you know, so I have now, I guess I would say, three coordinated conceptions. One is what I call the right to a normal life. The other is this notion, which you might call Olam Kinin Hagdom Donei, right? That halacha doesn't tend to challenge the basic framework of a society unless it has to. That seems to go into the other thing, and things basically work. And then the third thing, which I think is much more controversial, but you can see how it extends out of those two now, is the question to which halacha is talking within the framework of the ethics of a profession, as opposed to assuming that halacha is supposed to determine the framework of the ethics of a profession. In other words, you could reframe the Sicilian as saying, the medical profession has determined that it's not a breach of confidentiality to tell things to secretaries and office workers. Halacha takes that as a given. The notion of confidentiality, halacha accepts that notion of confidentiality. Now, we can extend it and say, okay, what are the normal conceptions of gossip that function in the universe of journalism? Now, we understand perfectly well that the medical, telling the secretary does not extend to gossiping about patients in elevators, you know, and that's why there are big signs in all the hospitals saying you may not talk about patients in elevators, I don't know if it's a number, right? We also know that, of course, the reason we have to put the signs up is because people thought we were talking about, right? So we have to report we are talking about the medical professional ideology, right? Not the medical reality. But if I'm interpreting Sicilia there correctly, what he's saying is that we have no interest in pretending that the medical profession has not happened as it is, regardless of halakha. Our job is to enable people to function within that framework. And the question then is there some kind of corollary conception that we might have of journalism
Now, we could argue that we think journalism is inessential and that medicine is essential. We don't have to come to those terms. We can argue that just as we believe, for example, I think we ought to believe that if the medical profession requires the killing of large numbers of people, which it may right now, we could take the position that we simply are not willing to tolerate that. There's a line within which halacha, right? There's a certain point which halacha develops to a point, which the medical profession develops to a point that not only wouldn't halacha have, as we have it, have developed it that way, but that we find it impossible to function within that framework. Right? Let's say if it was accepted that all GPs had to perform elective abortions into the third trimester, which is not an impossible situation, you know, to develop in America. And it's not in America, but other countries. So if you just make it a rule that part of your obligation to the patients is you have to be willing to abort whenever they want. I think that that probably we would feel halachically that at that point it is no longer much to be a doctor, period. And somebody would argue that maybe it's only Jabban and all that. I myself would be deeply distressed. I know that such an argument could be made. I myself would be deeply distressed if we were to make such an argument. But absent such a claim, right, and assuming that we can evade the, not just the brain death issue, but the reality that we do not make all efforts to save all lives at all times in hospitals and consciously, that I was just talking to a student of mine of a Shabbos who was saying, essentially, you walk into the hospital as an intern and they're telling you, we're not going to save this patient, and pull that plug there. So it may be that someone argued that that I could see somebody plausibly arguing that if I can't deal with medicine the way it's practiced in hospitals now, they would have to explain what they would really want a halachic hospital to look like, and I would not give that so much dignity if they would say it would look exactly the same just as a Shabbos box. Right? Which is the only answer we give, right? As the people who have that basic critique right now, the only answer they have is a Shabbos box. But what I'm suggesting is absent a fundamental irreconcilable breach. And what you have is a position...
Could you define that fundamental breach?
The post-game, the community. Here's the way I'm going to try and give the most radical formulation of this I can right now, and you'll see if you want to put it this way. Right? One formulation has as follows. Halakha could have developed in thousands of different ways. Right? That there are thousands of ways that halakha could have developed doesn't mean there's an infinite number of ways. Right? Should in time with Sarah, but doesn't mean that every face, right? There shouldn't work. There are thousands, right? but some of them are not. Halacha crystallizes in particular forms, right, where some of those options become law and some of those options become not law. What happens when halacha meets a processual framework that we can look at and say, yeah, halacha could have turned out that way. It didn't. The way halacha has turned out, there is a prima facie formal incompatibility between halacha and its professional sense of ethics. But we don't see that as fundamental. It just happens that we made certain decisions that we could have made differently. So in those circumstances, do we say, well, this is what halacha is, and if the profession grew up differently than Yisrael Adina Tahar, and Jews can't practice this profession? Or do we say, if we recognize that we have no fundamental problem with the profession as it is, it just happens that halacha as it grew up independently of that profession, did not grow up in the same way, that we see it as our task to try and find a way to somehow meld those roles together. An analogy to the professional code would be the Shev Mrs. Benoah. Okay, so the Ramban says, very compellingly, that really about 300 of our mitzvot are included in the Shev Mitzvot Benoah. They had most of our mitzvot. 307, okay. I can get the most. including, you know, the obligation to have a criminal justice system, the obligation to set up a strike to judge the deacon, all sorts of things like that. So they have a really interesting discussion about whether they are bound by halacha as we have it in understanding each of those mitzvot, or no, they're bound to interpret those mitzvot in a way which is compatible with Torah. But there are many ways in which they correct, in which you can set those up if they're compatible with Torah, and we're open to the possibility that they will set up an entirely different one, so long as we can recognize it as compatible with Torah. If you take the second position, which seems to me far and away the most plausible, that the mitzvah of dinim, it's not our job, actually, right, to say that we need to set, as opposed to the machlokas thing about whether there is a chiyuv, right, just, you know, we have a chiyuv the whole year, the year, the whole shevet, the shevet, so do non-Jews have an obligation the whole year, the year, or only every national, or only every country, and what is a shevet anyway, right, in non-Jewish law, right, those seem to me to be sterile arguments, right, we say that sometimes they have an obligation to ensure social justice. Whatever type of legal system will establish social justice is compatible with the mitzvah of dinim. Now, it may be that we could have set up a system which is locally based, or we could have set up a system nationally based, or in fact the system we set up which is local, tribal, national. But we recognize that otherwise we could have done it.
We have a need to impose it on them. And it's not clear to me that we have a need to impose the specific frameworks of halakha on professions. And the question that comes in, what happens when somebody who does this,
when somebody who does accept this framework functions within, like, steps into, like, when a Jew walks into a land which observes the Shabbat Mitzvah Tein Noach, whose jurisdiction is he subject to? So the way we have the office system set up on that issue, right, we have extraterritoriality wherever Jews go. Right, because the model we have is an imperial system. Like sometimes we read on the world, right, and all other legal systems, right, you know, America, right? Wherever you go, you're surrounded by a bubble of our legal system. I'm leaving aside the question whether that ought to be the case or not, in the Muslim Mashiach, right, the Tzilchus of Mashiach. But I'm raising the question whether that ought to be the case, about how we treat people in professional jurisdictional zones, whether we view them as being surrounded by a bubble of halacha as it is, or whether we find, right, we say that Dina Lachutabina, to the extent that this is compatible with our fundamental framework. Okay, I don't know that I'm endorsing this. I think it ought to be out there as the most radical, right, as the most radical kind of I can frame for thinking of the relationship to Halakha and professional ethics. Right,